Hello. I'm against the clock today. I've got to record this before the workmen resume their work next door. Talking of which, like, my neighbours are scaffolding up at the moment because they're getting all the tiles taken off of their roof for asbestos or something. Or say, I don't know what happens to tiles. They've pissed themselves. The tiles have pissed themselves. So when we had it on our house a couple of years ago, it was really fun to sort of fuck about on the scaffolding. So three nights ago, about 1 a.m., I climbed on, I've got a whisper in case you can overhear me. I climbed onto out of my bedroom window, maneuvered myself across and slid down onto their scaffolding, not realizing that the neighbor was right there by the window, standing in the middle of the room, but not looking out. I've got that hot, cold belly flop panic. And so swung around the edge, slid down the longest pole. And he started calling out of his window. So I silently stood by my garage. This is at the front of the house, without moving a muscle. And as soon as I heard his window click back shut, I had to ring my doorbell to wake up my dad so he could let me in. He asked what I was doing outside, and I said I was getting a Magnum from the freezer in the garage. When he asked where the Magnum is, I replied, I sat an 8 in the garage, didn't I? It's common sense, Mark. Use your head, boy. Under one pendulant light bulb with pictures of boxes that I ripped from magazines and put on the wall to try and inspire me to do weight training in the garage, which I used to do for a little while. And then I stopped and became like, I mean, I'm pivoting back to the kind of mental manic mindset I have, where I speed walk for 3 hours nonstop. I live on pips, or like David Bowie in Berlin, live on red peppers, cocaine, and milk. Or like Tiny Tim, someone that I love, used to play long-haired, scraggly-haired Christian who got married on the Ed Sullivan Show, one of them shows. He lived on pumpkin seeds. I like that idea of asceticism, of distilling your life down to the most simple kind of sustenance. We'll go back to that thought, because I was reading a good thing about that. It's a book about the philosophy of debt. And I said that if in economic terms you don't factor in gratuitous and irrational waste when thinking about the body politic, you have a severe lack of understanding about human behavior. I mean, we shouldn't be wasteful with our money, with our resources, but we just are. I mean, my view of it is just do it and see what happens. I think there was a writer, Ivo Svevlut? No, that's not a real name. There's a writer whose wife, in her autobiography, said she'd ask him to go out to the shop and get some essentials, like essential purchases. And he'd come back with like a gourd and a couple of rats and a chiffon scarf. That's the kind of thing I used to do. I used to drive my ex-girlfriend bonkers, but she was quite bonkers in her own right, meaning severely mentally ill. Really quite a damaged person. Very unwell, very unwell, very unwell. I'm joking. Is it a joke? Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. It is a joke. She was fine. She was all right. There's a guy at work as well who really likes pornography, and understandably, the female carers aren't comfortable allowing him to watch it. I mean, she was anchored in reality to an extent. But then sometimes you'd present it with the concrete facts of reality, and she couldn't reconcile her version of what transpired to the black eye on my face. Oh shit! I'm gonna have to. No, this is all just fine. So yeah, there's a guy I care for who likes pornography, but understandably, the female carers aren't comfortable allowing him to watch it. When I have a shift at that facility, I'm the only male carer, so I'm assigned to him. And I said, I don't mind if he puts on his favourite one, which is Plumpers and Their Dumpers. So at tea time, I assist him with the Tagliatelle, where he watches anal sex and occasionally goes, oh, lovely. So he speaks. He's got like boggly pug eyes that move in different directions. And the other says, fuck off. Why don't you just fuck off? Or he goes, oh, lovely. When there's a man plugging a woman's asshole with his penis, which is generally how anal sex works. Doesn't have to be a penis. I mean, it could be a gourd. Or a gerbil. I remember once my dog Dave had a load of rope. My mum had to. It was like a magician pulling scarves from his sleeve. And it'd been never ending. Her pulling a rope out of his ass, and he was just sitting there with like a strained grin on his face, going. So what? It's just rope, mate. Like, why are you filming this? So, I ate a bit of rope and it's got to come out some way. And mum's giving me a hand. There's nothing shameful about that. Just back off. So I have reached this episode's already. I don't edit these, so I might release this one and instantly delete it, or delete it in a couple of weeks' time, just because I don't want the old ex-aggy. It is an ethical dilemma, this stuff as well. So I know there was a I won't mention a name, but it was in like the national newspapers. It was kind of a real test case with a brilliant comedian, and her ex-husband tried to sue her for defamation because she'd alluded to him in an Edinburgh Hour. And this idea of what is ours to use within the context of like an hour comedy show. I mean, you should make it funny. Like, I didn't make the stuff that I spoke about very, very funny, but I have. I'll do a bit that I do on stage. So I say that my ex had an unspecified mental health disorder. Don't want to say specifics because I don't want to stigmatize anyone. I'm a drug addict, quite a tempestuous dynamic. And when we were first getting together, she felt a bit insecure about the relationship. So I sent her a message saying, I've resigned myself to the fact that I'll have to traverse a difficult path, but it makes it all worthwhile if it leads back to you. And usually the audience go, oh, and I'll let it lie. And then I go, but then she burnt my books and punched my mum. And I thought, I think I'll get off at the next slip road, love. Get off on the next slip road there. But, you know, to be fair, like, gee, we both contributed negatively to that relationship. I once refused to siphon water out of our flooded bedroom because I was too busy making a stop motion animation of a peanut wrestling a sweet corn in the kitchen. So my mum definitely deserved to get punched for that. Someone's mum was going to have to get punched. It's going to have to happen at some point. It's all right. A passage. You get into a relationship, mummy gets punchy. Mummy gets boffed. My mum used to be called Biff because her godchildren, because she once beat up two men with a tambourine. Two men who were trying to assault her. Good old mum. So yeah, I've reached a landmark in this podcast, and thank you. There's plenty of repeat listeners who always kindly message me on Twitter and help me promote this podcast. I would love to read out the names, but I always get worried that I'm gonna miss someone. So I thought it's best just to you know who you all are, and I hope I engage with you enough on Twitter, because I really am appreciative. I love all of you, and thanks so much. And it's nice to develop a connection with you via Twitter and messages and stuff like that as well. So yeah, 1,500 listeners, and it's kind of come at a really good point, because this is going to be the penultimate episode of the series anyway. But there will be another series, don't worry. But then I'm going to end this series next Tuesday, and it will be a birthday special, so a day early, because that will be my birthday. But yeah, no, I posted a memory recently on Twitter of a poster for a show called Help that I did at the Camden Fringe in 2017. It was after a 9-month hiatus from comedy, and I'd been to rehab in the beginning of the year. And I did it with one of my closest friends, Michael Wheeler, BAFTA Rowcliffe, TV comedy writer, winner. We've known each other since I was in nappies. It was like a really nice experience. And what's the name of the venue? Oh, how have I forgotten? It's a lovely, like, really underutilized venue in London. Kind of like a dark, intimate jazz bar vibe in Tufnell Park. Aces and Eights, that's it. Is that Aces and Eights? Three nights. A small but intimate audience. And they were really receptive and nice. And I brought a few stickers of my face, and I gave one to this really fit girl, and she put it on her bike. And then a year later, I saw the same bike with my face in it. But the bike was being walked along by a boy. So either it was a boyfriend or friend or roommate or brother, or she was mugged and left for dead. One or the other. But yeah, it was the first time that I realized strangers would take a punt on your show, even though I'm not a public figure or I've got a lot more visibility than I had back then, but still not loads. And that these strangers would actually pay to do so. And this was also a turning point in how I presented myself on stage. I was drug or drink free. That was the main difference. And I wasn't really manic and kinesthetic and sweaty like I used to be. I sat down. I used the stool to anchor me. And I just started telling stories. They weren't really laboured routines. Because when I'd be on stage, it was more like a recitation rather than a man on stage telling you some things. Because I'd have stuff that was written more like prose rather than stand-up material. And I'd have to recite verbatim. And if there's one little hiccup or I missed a word, I'd come unstuck. And I found it really hard to claw my way back to being but it's being in the old in, favored by the audience. That's not the right word. You know what I mean? So yeah, I mean, we get Elsa talk about, like, I will have a book coming out with Ebrie Penguin Books and their Ebrie division. I think I can announce that now on here, but don't tell anyone else. Keep that between us. It will be coming out. I have to change the title because we came up with a title, but. And there is a bit of context to it, but you only find out the context when you read the book. And if you took the title on face value, it might be seen to be a bit hateful. So I also asked if I could use this, my Facebook profile pictures, which is a picture of me rubbing my belly in delight with the words come over the top. And asked you, that's my author photo. Not only did they reject it, but they said, if I'm persistent about its use, it could lead to breach of contract. And I think that's worth the risk. I probably will be persevering with that, but no, I won't really. I'm going to read a bit about from the book Tell Them I Said No by Martin Herbert. This is a collection of essays by Martin Herbert as he considers various artists who have withdrawn from the art world or adopted an antagonistic position towards its mechanisms. It's just giving me ideas for when I eventually become a public figure of some renown, how I can then cultivate some more mystique by exiting public life. I mean, I'll do a Dave Chappelle. He famously stepped away from, what is it, £13 million deal with the Chappelle Show and went to live in Africa for a while. I'll do that, but I'll do it right now, where I'm not even a public figure, and I don't have any public profile. So I'll just take a step back from public life without being any part of public life. So I'll just continue doing what I've always done. Wake up in the morning, 2 cans of Coke, 3 muffins for breakfast. Do a bit of writing. Catch up on my magazines. Wait for my morning bowel movement. The Diet Coke usually gets that process going. I'll do that. It's activism. It's a form of protest. So in this particular essay, he's talking about Laurie Parsons, who was known for sort of found object or pre-made scatter installations. And this bit I love, and she ended up kind of leaving the art world, becoming a healthcare worker. And then she tentatively returned to the art world, got invited back, and got invited back to do a show at Lawrence Monk, which I'm assuming is like a prestigious gallery. And oh no, it was when she was invited to a show at a show in an institution in Rottweil, southwestern Germany. And she decided to merge artistry with everyday life and basic decency, offering the best possible alternative to purchasable objects. She proposed and was permitted to move into the gallery for the show's 7-week span, and also as part of the artwork to actually do shifts in a local psychiatric hospital or with working with developmentally challenged children. So the care shifts, and then her domestic situation, which at that point was living in the gallery, that became the artwork. How fucking amazing is that? I like to think of my care shifts, as I've said before, as a type of artistry to care work. You can turn the changing of an incontinence pad into a Japanese tea ceremony. I think that's great. I like to see that as an extension of creativity. The same way, actually, that this woman who was, sorry, Katie Porter, she was one of Elizabeth Warren's like protégés. And she talks in this article in Time about how teaching, because she was a student of Warren's at Harvard Law School, and then she was appointed to the role of California's independent bank monitor, and then she became a congresswoman for California's 45th district. But she said about her experience as a teacher that there's an artistry or like almost type of a performance art to teaching, and how she'd use these kind of grabby visual components within her teaching, like this formidable whiteboard that she always used to when people like JP Morgan Chase were being interrogated about why their employees' wages are so low. She calculated that a single mum working full-time at a Chase bank teller in Irvine would end up $567 in the red each month after paying for necessities like rent on a one-bedroom apartment and daycare. How should she manage this budget shortfall while she's working full-time at your bank? She asked Dimon, who's Jamie Dimon, who's the CEO for JP Morgan Chase then. And he didn't have a solution. So at yet another hearing in May 2019, she flummoxed Housing and Urban Development Secretary Ben Carson by quizzing him on the foreclosure-related term real estate own. Carson suggested that its acronym, REO, sounded like an Oreo cookie, and Porter threw away the cookies Carson, the Oreos that Carson sent her after hearing. A bit harsh. I mean, he was just trying to, he obviously fucked up. He was just trying to make light of it. But then maybe that's an avoidance technique rather than avoiding the malfeasance or the negligence of duty that Ben Carson is guilty of. He turns it into a joke, which is something I definitely do in like arguments within relationships. Rather than confronting the issue head on, I'll turn it into a little muckabout. Or I'll go hide in the public toilets. Wait till it blows over and she's gone to work. Drinking the Nesquik and vodka down in some dehydrocodone tablets or oxycodone oral solution. But yeah, she spoke about teaching as performance art. And I'll read another bit from Melanie Klein, the psychoanalysis of children. I'm just going to read at random. I picked this book up to see if there's anything in it that might be of interest, and this was the passage I came across. So, in the analytic session just described, Pete had been depicting the following things: the toy man, the deer, etc., which kept falling down, represented his own penis and its inferiority in comparison to his father's erect member. His going to pass water immediately after was done to prove to contrary to himself and to me. The motor car, which would not stop moving and which aroused both his admiration and anger, was his father's penis that was performing coitus all the time. After feeling admiration for it, he became enraged and wanted to defecate. This was a repetition of his passing store at the time when he had witnessed a primal scene. He had done this so as to disturb his parents while they were copulating and, in fantasy, to harm them with excrements. In addition, a lump of stool appeared to the boy as a substitute for his inferior penis. Harm them with excrements is what I might call one of my Edinburgh shows. Next year, the final, when I get around to do the debut, it's going to be called Incontinence Pad Disposal. But harming them with excrements would be a good follow-up title.
I had a therapist, a 12-step therapist. He kept talking about the plump tits of the milky mums who'd come to pick up their toddlers from the school next door. Anton spent 20 minutes a session talking about that. Said he wanted to lick one of them. Fucking creep, mate. Didn't help me get off drugs. Bit of trial and error, innit, with therapists. Like, I sometimes seek therapy in things that you shouldn't seek therapy in. Like, I wanted to bring the old team back together when I thought I was going to have to sign on again. I haven't signed on in over a decade. And when I thought I was going to have to sign on again during all of this, I thought it'd be good to get the old team back together again. But the old team is me and the job coach who once said not to treat the work journal like an actual journal because feelings aren't really part of this. And I think I might have said that on the last one. But anyway, that's today's episode, penultimate episode. And then next week we'll have a birthday special. And then I'm going to be 31 years old. Jesus. Good Lord. It's at that point where you start to reflect on what your achievements are. I haven't quite got many under my belt thus far. But we'll get there. I've got a book coming out. I'm big. I'm important. I've got a book. Got a book coming out. What have you ever done with your life, huh? I've got a fucking book coming out. Might call that harming you with excrements. I might just call it plump tip milky mums. My therapist certainly liked them. I'm sure there's other people like that who like that, so. Grabby. The grabby title, innit? I actually was going to call it Mr. Bloke is Demented because at my work, they used to have a sheet of what carers might say and what carers should say. What one of the examples of might say was Mr. Bloke is Demented. But then I've looked in books and articles recently, they're like academic texts, apparently saying they're demented is actually the correct medical term. So, but it doesn't sound right, does it? It sounds disrespectful. So yeah, we chuck that title. Got to think of a new one. If any of you have any selections, I don't like puns. I don't like shit like that. So, but if you can think of anything else, that's just quite evocative and sort of, you know, marketable, but a bit me, then please feel free to message me. Twitter @TheDailyBumbler. See you all next week. Thank you.